Happy ALCS Game 4 Thursday to all of you. Yesterday was supposed to be Game 4, but I think we went through yesterday's show kind of conceding that Mother Nature was going to rule the day yesterday. Not today, biatch. Today, baseball will be played. Tonight, more specifically, baseball will be played, and damn it, Zach Greinke's going to be on the mound ready to go against Masahiro Tanaka at Yankee Stadium. What's happening? My name is Sean Pendergast. I'm alongside original Texan, Seth Payne. Hello, Seth.
He's due. That's what Greinke is. He's due.
Yeah. He is due.
Sure. Has it been several years since he had a really good playoff performance? Of course it has. All that means, I've learned this from my nerdy friends, regression to the mean. This is what's going to happen. His ERA is going to regress to the mean. Even though he's never actually had a good mean in the playoffs, it'll regress to that one.
It'll regress to that mean. The longer you, I find, if you're generally good at what you do, then it means the longer you've sucked, the more due you are.
Oh yeah.
So he is like super due.
Look, for people that don't understand math,
gather around. Kids.
They get all dazzled by allowing runs, and then sure, it hasn't looked like he's been all that great in the postseason in general, or this year in particular.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of time. Regression of the mean and such. That's what I say.
If you were going to explain this to you the way Bill O'Brien explains in-game decisions, you know, you need to be in math to understand kind of how regression to the mean works.
Nobody that's not in math would ever understand what I'm talking about.
Right.
Just trust me. Also, give me money and I'll give you 20% a year on your hedge fund.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. So it was kind of like having a night off last night for us a little bit, you know? Because Wednesday is, I don't know how you feel, Wednesday's like the deadest day on TV. Like, there's nothing on TV on Wednesday.
I don't really ever check what's on actual TV in primetime anymore either.
Yeah.
I find myself, it's not even an option.
Yeah.
Like, so last night I had been planning on watching baseball, and you're right, all of a sudden there's no baseball. And there's no part of my brain that's like, oh, let's check out what's on in primetime on the networks. I don't know. That's largely gone out of my playbook.
Watching. I let Amy handle most of my television scheduling of things, so therefore I wind up watching a lot of really crappy reality TV through osmosis of me sitting there working on the rundown to the show and communicating with you. There's really, really terrible television going on in the background, you know, like these reality shows and stuff like that, which are awesome.
Yeah,
but apparently she tells, I'll admit, I'm stealing her take, Wednesday's not a very good night for TV, so tonight would be a good night to go do something.
Let me tell you this. I'm going to ask you this.
Yeah.
I'm going to go through the primetime schedule for Wednesday evening. Because remember when you were in, I can almost remember, like, the Thursday night NBC lineup for a while was just the balls.
Iconic.
Right.
Yeah.
You remember some of those lineups. So I'm going to, from the big four networks, I'm going to tell you.
What were people watching last night?
Last night in prime time, when prime time started.
7, 8 o'clock.
Tell me if you even know half of these four.
Okay.
The Goldbergs. I think I saw a billboard for that.
I see promos for
it. Is that the one with the guy from...
Is that on Fox?
I think that's the one with the guy from the Larry David show, is it not?
Yeah, maybe so.
Yeah, the agent. That's on ABC.
We're going to sound really connected to pop culture in these next two minutes.
Well, it doesn't matter because the 20-year-olds, the hip kids, they don't know any of this stuff.
That's true. They've cut the cord on all this stuff. Yeah.
Survivor, of course. We know that.
Survivor.
I didn't know it was still around. I honestly 100% didn't know that it was actually still going. So good on you.
They've tweaked it many times, but yes, it's still around. Yeah.
The Masked Singer? I've seen a couple little videos of this. I think a famous singer comes and they're wearing a scary mask. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah.
And they're singing, and then people have to try to guess who they are.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's an interesting concept.
Chicago Med, a story about medicine in Chicago. As best as I can tell.
Oh, a wacky guy owns a pharmacy. And all of his friends stop by throughout the day.
It'd be better if it was called Chicago Meds and it was just some guy who's always losing his meds. Have you seen my meds?
Right. Yeah. Right. So that was
have
the prime
time. Have
you
taken your meds? Yeah, and then on the CW, of course, Riverdale. I have no idea what that is.
No, I don't either. So instead, we chose to take our rain out last night. We went and saw The Joker.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Have you seen it yet? No, I haven't.
Are you gonna go see it? That's kind of creeping me out, too.
Joaquin Phoenix is skinny as hell in that, is he not?
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't watch a lot of his stuff. Is he normally that skinny?
No. He had to lose weight for this role.
Okay, boy.
I mean, he's Hollywood skinny to begin with.
Yeah.
But he's even skinnier, which means in real life, he probably looked like a piece of uncooked spaghetti.
Yeah, he was emaciated in this movie, and it added to the character for sure. When I was coming in this morning, when I was walking down the hall, you know, we walked past the Bull studio, we walked past the Mix studio,
yeah.
And Lauren Kelly and Jeff Sheen were in there getting ready for their show, and I poked my head in to say, hello. And the big question on their show was, because I told them I saw the Joker last night. They said, wow, it just so happens the big question on our show is, should you take your 8-year-old to see the Joker?
Eight?
And I'm like, God, no. Like, I'm 50 and Amy is in her early 40s and we were terrified by it. Like,
really?
It was, yes, it's a messed up movie, dude.
Is it?
And it's really good, but it's
messed
up.
Anything with a clown.
Yes.
Clowns are terrifying to children.
And there are clowns everywhere in this movie.
Oh, it's not just him, the clown?
No.
There's multiple clowns?
There are clowns. Yes. Yes.
He becomes their lord ruler.
There's a clown movement. That's what it feels like at the end a little bit.
Oh, really? Does he start to get acolytes?
I don't know. Here, yes.
Don't tell me.
Yeah, a little bit. Here's what. This is not going to spoil the movie for anybody, so I'm not even going to say spoiler alert. You know my issue with most superhero / comic book movies. My big issue is that at the end of the ones that the good guys win, that every single time the city is torn to pieces afterwards.
Right. You're calculating in your head how many billions of dollars of damages there are,
which really distracts me from the storyline.
Well, yeah, maybe they should have just surrendered and gone along for a little while, had an underground resistance or something.
It would be easier on the taxpayers, for sure, right? I mean, most people, even if there's a cruel dictatorship, they're just going to wake up and go to work in the morning anyways. Yeah. So they should have let Zod win or whoever in these movies. Anyways, so that, you know, that's my glitch. Well, in this Joker movie, a lot of that happens. There's a lot of damage that's done in this movie. But at the end of the movie, it's told the story of the evil villain. Like, it's logical. I go, okay.
Oh, I got you. So you like that.
The certain kind of way I'm supposed to feel.
You can see how this guy has terrorized an entire city.
And it aligns with my glitchiness over the destruction.
Okay.
Like, why am I supposed to feel good at the end of all these movies with the good guys in it?
Yeah.
If the city has been torn like 9/11 times 10.
Because it could have been worse. It's just like post-World War II Europe, you know?
Just blow up the planet. In comes the Death Star.
I don't like, this is what I don't like about it, even before I've seen the movie.
Yeah.
I generally don't like it when people humanize the villain. And I've seen that. Even the trailers themselves will say, this is the first one that's shown the humanity of the Joker. Well, I like there to still be boogeymen in the world.
Yeah.
Where it's not like, I don't need to know exactly how he came to be the scary creature that he is. I don't want to have empathy for the villain. I just want to look at him as this black and white, just evil dude, and that's all there is to it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
Does it humanize him a little bit?
Yes.
Do you feel sympathy for him?
It does. I do.
I don't need that in my life.
I do. Yeah.
Give him the chair. Yeah. That's what I say.
You know what? I'm going to start to veer into an area where I'm spoiling it for people, and we're still only like a week in, and I want to respect a good non-spoiler. But I would say thumbs up. We enjoyed it. I'm not going to go see it again because I'd like to sleep at some point over the next few months.
So it is not scary, though. That's good to know.
It's pretty scary, yeah.
You know, a lot of people say that horror movies aren't scary anymore, and I think that's usually just from people that have seen a lot of horror movies because it all rolls into the same, and you anticipate the jump scares and whatnot. Yeah. As somebody that's been terrified of horror movies since a young child, they are still scary to me, and I know this isn't a horror movie per se, but horror movies are still scary to me because I don't go to see them. I don't like it. I never have. So when I do end up kind of being forced or pressured into seeing one, it's still terrifying for me.
Yeah.
I'm kind of deeply ashamed of the way I behave during horror movies. And I always worry. I make my wife sit in the back with me because I don't want anybody in the theater that might recognize me to see me like grabbing my wife when I'm scared.
Do you squeal?
No, but I breathe real heavy.
You do? You sweat?
I gasp, I guess, is
you
what I
sweat?
Do. No, but I tremble. Yeah. I tremble and gasp.
Yeah.
And I know, like, even though I know a jump scare is coming, it doesn't matter. It still scares the crap out of me.
Well, that's a sign of a good horror movie. If you're still, if you're
but
grabbing
even the
your
bad
wife,
ones, it doesn't have to be a good
one. Do
you
just sometimes go, let's just make out? I don't even want to look at this movie anymore. We're in the back of the theater, Brandy. Let's just make out and not look at this movie.
I don't think my wife, I don't think that's one of the things she's into.
When was the last time you made out in the movie?
Get scared theater? And make out. Yeah. That'd be awesome if she was. Why don't you scare me and then make out with me? I can do that.
We watched all the Friday the 13th, and then we made passionate love. So
kind of sick in the head.
So shifting.
And I like it.
Shifting gears here real quick. So there is game 4 tonight. Do we still... I think you and I were on the same side of this argument yesterday, Seth, that we would have liked to have seen Game 4. We would have liked to have seen Game 4 played last night because of just how taxed the Yankee bullpen was. And just to quantify this, Games 2 and 3, the Yankees bullpen pitched 12 and a third innings. Games 2 and 3, the Astros bullpen pitched 6 and two-thirds innings.
Yeah.
Literally about half the amount of usage for the Astros bullpen. I think our feeling was yesterday, boy, this would be a good day to pounce on the Yankees. I saw several counter arguments to feeling like, man, it would have been great if they played yesterday on Twitter. And a lot of them made sense. It winds up being six of one, half a dozen of another, because the bottom line is the Astros, with winning Game 3, have put themselves in a really good position in this series, regardless of when these games are played.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
are you still feeling the same way?
I'm feeling I could go either way. For one, I know that yesterday the Yankees, you could say, hey, the Yankees pitchers and the relief staff especially is taxed, so that's a great day for them to have a bullpen day. They're still going to have to play, the Yankees are going to have to play four games in a row again.
Yep.
In some ways, this has turned back into falling where you would have wanted it to fall beforehand, because the strength of your team with the Astros is you in theory, have a much better starting first three pitchers. You definitely do with the first two. Number three is up for grabs. So you now get back into a point where you could conceivably use all three of your starting pitchers in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Cole might have to go on short rest if he goes on Saturday. But you have that bullpen day still looming, but it could be Game 6 or Game 7. You got a little bit more control over it. And the Yankees are still going to have to go, likely, unless there's weather delays, four games in a row. The one thing I wonder, too, is the really hard travel day is going to be Friday to Saturday. Friday night,
yes,
they'll play. Then they travel. They'll get in at 4 or 5 in the morning into Houston. They'll play again that evening. I think the Astros probably have a little bit of a natural advantage there because they get to go home, sleep in their own bed, probably be a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah.
Now, what I had been hoping, in my mind, I had messed it up somehow. I was thinking that Verlander was going to coach. If Cole, okay, this is where you have an advantage. Maybe Saturday ends up being the bullpen day for the Yankees. In that case, Cole, if he's going to pitch on short rest, can still go home the day before. He'll be here in Houston on Friday. He'll sleep in his own bed, get a good night's sleep on Friday evening, keep up his normal routine and everything, versus potentially, if he plays that day versus a bullpen day or whatnot from the Yankees and a bunch of guys that are maybe beleaguered and tired out by then.
To me, Seth, when Cole pitches is completely dictated on what the score of the series is.
Yeah.
If the Astros are up 3-2, then you load up to pitch Cole on full rest and you have Cole as a backup in Game 7 on full rest, in part because if you are able to finish off the series in 6, then you get Cole lined up for the beginning of the World Series against the Nationals. You're able to kind of line up your rotation. That winning one of these next two games would be gigantic for the Astros. To come home up 3-2 and then be able to go, you know what, we'll go bullpen day Game 6, and maybe we win that thing because the Yankees are at a stage where they need to do a bullpen day also. And then we have Cole loaded up for Game 7. To me, Cole only pitches in Game 6 if you lose these next two games.
You know what the beauty of this series is right this moment? You mentioned the Nationals just now, and I was kind of surprised. I thought, oh, wait, yeah, we still have that to worry about potentially.
I've been thinking the same thing, dude.
Honestly, in my mind, I feel like I'm in the zone. All I see is this series.
Yeah.
As an athlete, I wish I could have been like this. This is where I'm so focused on the Yankees that the World Series is almost an afterthought at this
That's
moment.
So true, dude. I was thinking about that last night. Amy and I were talking about it in the car, and I'm talking about this, like, and then I think I even made some sort of comment, like, and then they'll have won the whole thing. And I'm like, wait a second. Oh, crap. There's still a whole other series.
I despise the Yankees fans so much at this point that just keeping the Yankees out of the World Series
for
a full decade feels like a win. Yeah.
I know. I wish the Nationals were more hateable. All right.
We'll find a way.
Yeah. No, we will. We'll conjure up some fabricated hatred for sure.
Signed Dan Skipper to the 53-man roster. We released Alex Magoo. We signed Kyle Murphy to the practice squad, offensive lineman. We are placing Chantrell Henderson on the NFI list. And we're going to sign Chris Clark, and he should be here at practice today.
Ah, Chris Clark era 2.0.
Chris Clark. Good to have him back. Chris Clark, a guy that I've wondered at times, there have been various times where, as I've been watching some rando struggle at offensive tackle for the Texans, I've thought many a time, wow, you know, Chris Clark is still playing football. And I, is he the...
Well, he was one of the randos at one point.
Yeah, but he wasn't really a rando. He would always step in and be a competent backup. That's what he would do. He was in a pinch. He's a fine starter. He has displaced. Since he's left Houston, he's actually displaced some named starters where he's been. Yeah. Like, he's been a starter in the NFL.
Yeah.
Versus, like, random project that was good at some Division III school, and he's tall. So there you go.
I think I'm going to like him a lot better this time around here, that he is a backup and not... The start. He became the starter for about half a season one of the years he was here.
You can trust that he'll come in and know what he's doing and not get completely mollywomped. This Dan Skipper character, the 6'10".
Well,
guy.
You sure are intrigued by Dan Skipper.
He's so tall.
I feel like you're going to show up at the pregame in a Dan Skipper jersey.
It's just interesting because he should be playing basketball. You look at him and he's
6'10", 320 for those who don't
and
know.
He looks a little bit like a teenager that needs to put some muscle on his frame, but then you remember, he's 6'10".
Right.
If you were a basketball player, he'd probably be about 50 pounds lighter and still look big.
He would not be 320 pounds.
He's got big bones for a 6'9", 6'10" guy.
He'd either be thinner or he'd be a goon.
It gives you an appreciation for how athletic some guys, like, say, a Chandler Parsons are. Guys
that height.
Chandler's about 6'9", is he not?
I think he's taller than 6'9".
What we haven't done is, they came out with the actual real NBA heights. And it's interesting. The trend I noticed as they were releasing some of them was that the younger guys, it's closer to their actual height. A lot of the older guys, like Draymond, I think is listed as 6'9".
Hold on. Clarify for me. What did they do?
They've come out with the actual verified NBA heights.
Who's they?
I don't know. I guess the league is releasing them.
Okay.
I was following some Twitter account over the weekend. I wasn't paying close attention to it.
But
some of the actual heights are coming
out. Have been leaked?
They've been leaked, I suppose, but I think the NBA is doing it. I don't know if this is in the spirit of openness to show that, hey, China might lie to you, but not us.
So is everybody's real height like 2 or 3 inches shorter than they actually are?
No. The older guys' heights are 2 or 3 inches shorter than they actually are. The younger guys, because they've gone to these combines and everything, it's more of an open
book. It's more accurate.
The younger guys, it'll look like, they're actually a half inch shorter than how they're listed. Which is if you're going to round up, I don't care if you round up from 6'6 1/4 to 6'7", I'm cool with it.
Yeah.
But some of these guys, like Draymond might be listed at 6'7", but he's actually 6'5", or he's listed at 6'6", and he's actually 6'4", which makes sense.
Wow.
You look at Draymond, you don't think... You know that he's.
Well, I don't think he's 6'4", though. Yeah. Maybe it's because he plays the five so much. Maybe I'm tacking a few inches onto him.
That's what makes it even more impressive.
Yeah.
Now Dwight Howard also was one that got bucked down quite a few.
That makes sense.
Some people, every now and then, you'd see Dwight listed as a 6'11" guy, and he's just not.
You think he's shorter than that?
Yeah, he's definitely shorter than that.
I feel like he's gotten shorter, too, with his back issues. Like, his spine is compressed.
Like an old man.
He's at least a half inch shorter.
But then he lost weight, too. Okay, Draymond's listed at 6'7".
Okay. Yeah. But we're thinking he could really be 6'5".
He's actually 6'5".
Yeah, you know who...
Oh, go ahead.
You know who was like that? Charles Barkley.
Yeah.
Charles Barkley was listed at 6'6". People who played against him and who watched him play and who stood next to him always said, this guy's not taller than 6'4". No chance.
Yeah.
Which made him so amazing. He was always, he had 13 rebounds a game, it felt like, a lot of seasons.
Yeah, if I were a guy that wasn't classic height and I had a lot of rebounds and everything, I think I would actually want to be listed as shorter.
You would want to be listed? That was going to be my question. Like, what do you think these guys want? Do you think they want to be listed as shorter?
No.
Or do you think they want to be perceived as gigantic, even more... gigantic individuals.
I think perception matters, and it matters with people that you think it wouldn't. You think that scouts and coaches would be all about the production, but they have their preconceived notions, and then they end up seeing what they want to see. Because this happens in every sport, the people that the scouts think, like, this guy's that athletic and whatnot, and they kind of ignore the guy that's actually gotten 10 or 12 sacks in favor of the guy that has classic speed and prototype size.
Oddly enough, I feel like football players are probably more self-conscious about their heights than basketball players are, which is strange because basketball is a sport that's predicated on height. But on basketball courts, you do what you do. People watch, and ultimately they see how you play. They don't care how tall you are. And maybe I mean this in terms of coming into the league.
Uh-huh.
Remember, what was the big story at the combine this year? How tall is Kyler Murray going to be?
Right.
Is he going to be taller than 5'10"?
Quarterback, it's a big deal.
Yeah.
Less of a big deal than it used to be,
but I think
obviously.
It's a big deal at some other positions, too. Like offensive line, maybe it's not so much height as it is arm length.
Yeah.
Look, they tweet out the stats during the combine of these guys' arm length measure and hands.
Yeah.
Look at this. Hand was only 9 1/4 inches. Oh, my God.
There is something, I'll tell you
what. That must be terrible on the sack.
Something damn intimidating about a man with a freakishly large hand.
Right.
Some of these old NFL guys, I feel like their hands keep growing after they retire. They're like guys that never lifted weights in their life, but you shake hands with Dr. Doom, and you're like, you sir could kick my ass at your advanced age, and it would be really embarrassing
for
me.
That was neat, the way you just swallowed my forearm with your hand. That was really cool. I think if I was a football player, I'd rather have really big hand sizes published out there on Twitter than height.
Yeah, well,
big hands. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like that's if you're a young football player who's single, I would want, if I had like a 10.5-inch hand, I would want everybody to know about it.
Remember when supposedly that
would be my first thing I'd put on Tinder under my bio.
You remember that one photo of DeAndre that leaked?
Yeah,
suppose it wasn't his. He said those are
allegedly,
not mine.
Yeah.
But the one thing I wondered about that is like that's the one downside to having big hands is if a photo leaks, it's going to make other things look comparatively smaller.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So like, why bother with the big hands if it's just going to dwarf other, which might be fine sized? Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe there's people out there with hand fetishes. Who knows? So Kenny Stills is going to be back this weekend, it would appear. He was a full participant yesterday.
Yeah, so that's very good to see. I was about to say,
I'm excited for these four receivers all healthy until I saw Will Fuller has a calf and an oblique issue.
Oh, really?
He was limited with a calf and an oblique yesterday.
I completely missed that because I was focused in on the fact that Stills was out there as a full participant.
Yeah.
And Roby was limited.
He was limited
with
a hand.
Which surprised me because I kind of thought Roby's going to be out for a couple weeks. So maybe there's a chance that Roby plays this weekend. Yeah. I don't know. Jonathan Joseph feels like he's probably going to play.
Right.
I was pleased with Philip Gaines. Philip Gaines had some rough downs in the game, but for what he was tasked with doing, and then also because that put a lot more pressure on Lonnie Johnson, I think those guys did about as well as you could have expected and hoped for. So the defensive backfield is a concern, and it will be for a while. But the Roby news was good. So Fuller was limited.
Limited.
He'll be
with,
fine.
With, yeah, no, he. I think he's been limited the last couple weeks, but it's been non-football stuff. I don't know what. I feel like limited is a place where sometimes they park guys that they just don't want practicing.
I noticed some teams will say,
give him an oblique, whatever.
Some people will say non-football reasons, rest.
Yeah.
But then I don't know if the Texans, I haven't seen the Texans do that yet, so I think sometimes they'll put non-football reasons, and I think it's just because somebody's resting.
They did that with Hopkins last week. They did non-football rest, which makes this
they did say rest.
Which makes this, yes, they or like day off or something like that. He reportedly has a rib now, according to the injury report.
Hopkins?
Yeah, I think he's going to play because he always plays.
There's a nice piece.
He's DeAndre Hopkins.
There's a nice piece on ESPN.com about DeAndre Hopkins. Mina Kimes did this about DeAndre and his mom who'd been a victim of domestic violence and just how great and cool DeAndre has been with domestic violence.
Yeah, it's a cover story. And I bookmarked the actual magazine story, but they did about a 6-minute video feature that I watched yesterday on it. That's really, really good.
Which is interesting because on the football side of things, Trent Brown, a man who is the object of many people's desires in the offseason, ended up signing with the Oakland Raiders. Yeah. He was just accused of domestic abuse in a civil lawsuit, accused of multiple acts of domestic violence in 2018. I would say, as you do with any of these situations, when it's a domestic violence case and it's a civil lawsuit and there's very, very little in the way of actual details known about it yet, I would withhold judgment.
Let
and
it
just
play
tell
out.
You. Because with lawsuits, and again, I'm not saying that she's lying or anything like that, but with lawsuits, there's no screening or anything by the police at this point. It's just somebody's making an allegation. Suffice to say, though, that this is not the kind of thing the Texans enjoy or any football team have about their football team floating out there. So did the Texans dodge a bullet by not bidding as much on Trent Brown?
I think when you consider that Laremy Tunsil is now the solution at left tackle, then hell yeah. When Laremy Tunsil is the solution, as I avert my eyes from the fact they don't have a first-round pick until 2022, then I would say yes, they dodged a bullet.
Well, that's where the Trent Brown... Let's imagine that this doesn't exist right now. Trent Brown is going to cost probably the same amount of money as Laremy Tunsil in terms of his contract. You're going to pay Laremy Tunsil just as much as the 49, as much as the Raiders played.
Probably more.
But the Raiders got to retain two first-round draft picks because they didn't have to trade for him.
Yep. I think Tunsil's a much better player than Trent Brown, too. Ultimately, I think he's going to be a better player. It was nice and cool out this morning. Ali was apologizing because she had to pull out winter clothes, and she was like, if my shirt smells... it's because I had to pull winter clothes out of the closet.
It's not like we're nuzzling up next to her.
It's
to
not, and
keep
I
warm or anything.
What I felt like saying to her is, on our best day, as far as aroma goes, we don't smell as good as Ali Escobar.
Right. Well, she knows that she expects that, and she assumes that we expect her to smell good.
Right, right. So she was apologizing.
She never, So what would her, did she say it would smell like mothballs?
I said mothballs. I was, but she was saying my shirt may smell because I'm starting to pull a lot of my winter clothes out of the closet.
Yeah, that's always a big question you have to ask yourself. Do I wash this once before I put it on?
If it's been in a closet, it's probably a little musty.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do that, everybody.
What do you do? What's your recommendation?
Whatever my wife tells me to, for the most part.
That's a good answer.
I'm pretty lucky with it. I discover that. Every time she goes away, I'm like, gosh, she really, I always think I'm like this enlightened dude that does work around the house and everything.
Yeah, you're
not. I'm a bum. Yeah. I'm really a bum. It's really, like, it's almost a full-time job keeping my house anywhere close to where it is when my wife is around.
You are a bum with four walls and a deceptively fast van. That's the only thing separating you from a bum.
my van actually got cleaned now because the weather cooled off a little bit. I can't be expected to clean a van while it's hot outside. Because remember, it's still air-conditioned inside, but there's something about going back and forth and hauling crap out of my van when it's hot.
Did you clean it or did you drive through some place?
No, I cleaned it. The inside of it. Well, yeah, I got personal items in there and financial things like that. I have professionals do that. I can't be true.
I have professionals do both, yeah. If you want to know the truth. Yeah, yeah. It's fun just to sit there with a cup of coffee and then poof, 20 minutes later, you have a fully clean car. There's a
person in Jacksonville who's upset about the fact that he's pulling his weight more than perhaps his spouse is, and that's Doug Marrone. I want you to listen to this because Doug Marrone is the only guy that gets up and speaks about things that are going on that team.
Right.
None of the other front office executives, and most notably Tom Coughlin himself, the big kahuna, get up and explain any of these moves. So here's Doug Marrone, a newly likable Doug Marrone, which is annoying me because now I kind of like him after this. This is Doug Marrone talking very frankly and openly to reporters about what he can and cannot say about the Jalen Ramsey trade.
I'm sure 5 years from now, 10 years from now, someone will be able to write about it. It's not my job to do that. And again, I know you guys are probably frustrated, but you're talking to a guy that has, I would say, a big job, you know, to get the players ready, that we're discussing something that has nothing to do with where my mind is right now, honestly. You know, and I respect the hell out of you guys. You know that. I just wish I can give you the insight and the answers that question needs to be answered. I don't have that. So, and I wish we can get someone up here that can answer it for. I do. But, you know what I'm saying, Gene? It's me. You know what I'm saying? So I really, you don't know. You know, you don't know until down the road.
So, there are two people that could talk: Dave Caldwell, the GM, and Tom Coughlin, the general manager.
I was just going to say, Marrone clearly not operating within the flat organizational structure,
right? And that would be, I mean,
it is a vertical organizational structure.
Speaking of laundry, he's airing some laundry right there, isn't he? He's saying, "Look, why don't one of these guys get up here and tell you exactly what's going on?" And I don't know why they wouldn't. I mean, at some point, this is what we used to complain about and wonder about when Rick Smith was there. It seemed like Brian Gain, did we ever complain as much? We always felt like you'd want Rick Smith to explain some of the things that Bill O'Brien was stuck out there talking about.
Here was my frustration with Rick Smith, and I think with Brian Gain too. And with O'Brien, it's hard to say. We know he's sort of the general, not sort of, I mean, he is the general manager right now, but he's out there every week because he's the head coach.
Right.
They never, and maybe it was more Rick Smith than Brian Gain, because Brian Gain wasn't really here for any of these types of things I'm about to say. But when you trade Dwayne Brown and you're the general manager, you need to do a press conference.
Mm-hmm.
When you trade Brock Osweiler with a second round pick to get rid of his salary, you need to do a press conference. They never did those things. And it sounds like this is sort of the frustration that Doug Marrone is expressing right now. Like, we just traded maybe one of the top, I mean, you played for that franchise. I think one of the top three players in the history of that franchise. He's a multi-time All-Pro. And the head coach is out there on the front line having to explain things that were clearly done over his head.
Well, and this is where, if anything, the Jaguars, if they wanted to spin this appropriately, they could do a pretty good job. Because you know what they just did? They traded away a guy who desperately wanted to be out of there, where it would look like the Jaguars didn't necessarily have a whole lot of leverage or bargaining power, because everybody knows that Jalen Ramsey wants to get out of Jacksonville, and Jacksonville's stuck in this awful position, and yet there they are getting a couple of first-round picks from a team whose first-round picks are probably going to end up being a lot higher than people might have assumed they were going to be just 3 months ago.
If they're 8-8, they're going to be middle of the first round, which is pretty good. That's a good distinction, because we're starting to see more than ever star players being able to execute this NBA playbook, where if you make enough noise and you have a good agent, you can manipulate your way out of where you are. We saw Antonio Brown do it. Look at
Russell Westbrook.
In what way?
As far as the trade that you so the Oklahoma City is basically, their hands are tied.
Yeah.
And Russell Westbrook wants out, so you just gotta pretty much get rid of Russell Westbrook.
Yeah.
And we get Chris Paul back.
Yeah.
Like, what would you rather have, 2 first-round picks in the NFL or Chris Paul in the NBA?
Right.
So the Jaguars actually got pretty good value out of a guy that wanted to get out of there.
Yeah, and here's what I was going to make the comparison, and that's why I think your point is a good one about being able to spin this thing like, hey, man, this guy didn't want to be here, is the one I think it's more comparable to, because I mentioned Antonio Brown. We saw Clowney. I think Clowney wanted to stay here in his heart of hearts, unlike Antonio Brown and Jalen Ramsey. He wanted to stay here, but he could see the writing on the wall. So at that point, he was going to take as much control over that situation as he could. He winds up in Seattle. I think the one you compare it to, if you're Doug Marrone, or if you're Caldwell, or if you're Coughlin, is Antonio Brown. It's like, look, man, Antonio Brown made all kinds of stink that he didn't want to be in Pittsburgh anymore. Pittsburgh got their backs pinned against the wall and got a third and a fifth for him and had to take a $20 million cap hit.
Yeah.
We're taking no cap hit on Jalen Ramsey and got 2 first-round picks and a 4th-round pick. We did pretty good in this situation.
The big difference also is, I think, with Antonio Brown is crazy, where Jalen Ramsey is crazy like a fox. With Jalen Ramsey, it was very calculated, and you assume, I think what LA is probably thinking is, okay, here's a guy who wants to be a star. Here's a guy who wants to be a star to the point where he staged a Brinks truck appearance at training camp, botched it badly, but also probably didn't get as much attention as he would have if he had done it in Los Angeles.
For sure.
I think that you take it with the positives and the negatives, he'll be, I guess, quote unquote, happy. I don't know, like Jalen Ramsey's the kind of guy that's probably always going to be creating some kind of drama, but he'll be happy in LA even if they're a mediocre team versus probably going to an AFC championship game in Jacksonville and feeling like he wasn't getting as much attention as he should.
Yeah, and I'm maybe being over general with my comparison of Antonio Brown and Jalen Ramsey. Look, part of the reason the Steelers got less for Antonio Brown was because his level of a-holery was much worse than Jalen Ramsey's level of a-holery. Like, there was legitimate legalities involved with some of the things Antonio Brown was doing, and he's an older player too.
I think Ramsey's teammates like him.
Yeah.
That's a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, that's probably one of the first questions he asks, is how do his teammates feel about him? Is this a guy who's despised by, are we bringing a guy onto a team who's going to be despised by his teammates? Because that's always, whenever, and I don't look at Jalen Ramsey, it's interesting. He's not a character. He's like, he doesn't have off-field problems or anything at all like that. With him, it's all about, okay, what is he doing to your team by refusing to play in season?
Yeah.
Unless he genuinely had a back issue. I mean, he pulled an in-season holdout. I have issues with that.
Yeah, no, and I think that to me is the story. I think that to me, Seth, is a bigger story with the Ramsey thing than the fact that he's going to the Rams. Quite honestly, is that Ramsey is the latest NFL player to execute the new blueprint on how to get yourself moved out of somewhere if you don't want to be there anymore. The issues between Ramsey and really Coughlin started to come up last year with the GQ article, and Ramsey really starting to feel some of the rise of not just himself but also the Jags for that one season, right? Like, he was feeling pretty enabled and emboldened.
He wanted to capitalize on it, and meanwhile, Coughlin's telling him to shut his mouth.
Settle the hell down, right. And so that's where you start to see some friction, and I know for sure, back when I was doing afternoons, I know for sure we spent some segments going, hey, what if they traded Jalen Ramsey? What would be the price for Jalen Ramsey? And I feel it was one of those segments that at the time, as recently as a year ago, we had to preface by saying, we know this is never going to happen. Uh-huh. But because the NFL had so much control over players and keeping them, and not just keeping them, but I think kind of sort of making them understand, like, look, we're not moving you, man. So you either need to get in line or you can keep acting like this and it's going to be to your detriment. Now in the last year, we're starting to see teams capitulate to these guys and going, you know what? We're just, okay, we'll move you and we'll see what we can get for
and
you.
And I would say, okay, so who has it happened with so far? It's happened with
Antonio Brown.
And it's not like it's foreign or that guys have never asked for trades before. If anything, maybe it's just more public and more the dirty laundry is aired before you
that
see
could
it.
Be.
And trades are becoming, over time, it's not happening as fast as you think, but trades are becoming more commonplace and routine in the NFL.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
The trades were just never made in the NFL, period, let alone for disgruntled players.
So it's a little bit of a combo deal here where teams are more willing to trade players, and players seeing that are looking at it as an avenue to get themselves out of situations.
Yeah.
So, but the guys that can actually pull it off tend to be pretty damned good talents. It's Antonio Brown. It's Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, I won't say Clowney forced his way out, but Clowney definitely took control of where he was going to go.
Clowney knew he was going to get traded. Clowney, it feels like, and I know it's way more complicated, not just like this, but from the optics of it, it really felt like the Texans were like tricking a dog into getting into the car to go to the vet. Where they're like, hey, we're going to go to the dog park. And he's going to jump in the car.
You're saying when they say that they loved him? And
no, when they said, hey, we're just waiting for him to come in so negotiate. And Clowney's like,
sign is tender.
I know you're taking me to the vet in Miami. And I'm not going. You know when the dog gets wise to you and he's got that look in his face? It's kind of like a little mini growl. He's not gonna bite you because he loves you, but he's kind of like...
You used to like jumping into the car?
Yeah. It's something.
And then the mere sight of the car just completely scares
like something like there's some dogs that are pretty savvy, like something's different.
Yes.
Something's off. Wait a second. If we're going to the dog park, where's my play toy?
So Antonio Brown, Clowney is a different flavor of that. Jalen Ramsey. I'm trying to think, you know.
Well, because I think people lump Le'Veon Bell into this, but Le'Veon Bell just simply decided not to play football, and that was different. It wasn't like he forced the trade. It was that he was playing extreme hardball with the franchise tag and whatnot.
No, you know, again, not unprecedented, but very uncommon.
Forced his free agency.
Right. On the Ramsey situation, he is leaving the AFC South. I'm glad he's not going to another AFC team. It'll be nice to have him out of the division.
That's right.
Yeah, I say that. Deshaun Watson, though, is a much more competitive individual than I am. He said he liked having Jalen Ramsey in the division.
I mean, I would love to play against him. You know that. We love to compete. We've been competing against each other since, you know, I got in college. But, hey, you know, from what I've heard from, you know, him, he's happy in a good position.
They have the same agent. So it would stand to reason that Deshaun Watson would know exactly how Jalen Ramsey feels.
Plus, he's going to say he's got to play that one straight down the middle. What if Deshaun had gotten up there and said, "Phew, I am tired of being challenged. I don't want to." Thank God. Plus, not to mention the bulletin board material you create there. Where, yeah, boy, now it'll be easy to beat
Jacksonville. For AJ Boye.
Boy, yeah, thank goodness that now they don't have anybody over there.
I think he legitimately feels that way. Like, I think Deshaun is a guy who legitimately likes going against the best.
Oh, yeah, you enjoy that part of it. But sometimes you got to step back. I think the Bill O'Brien, you never want to get the Bill O'Brien disease where you almost, it feels like he wants things to be difficult.
Right.
No, you got to understand, it's got to be as hard as possible. We're going to win this game by a field goal, come hell or high water.
Do you think Ramsey gets a contract from the Rams between now and the end of the season or imminently here once he gets out there? Remember, you know,
Les Snead, the GM out there, he had a curious statement. He said that there was no timeline, then he kind of walked that back because I don't know if he was trying to negotiate publicly or not. It doesn't sound like they have a deal in place.
The Ramsey, there's still the fifth-year option available for Jalen. Jalen Ramsey and Laremy Tunsil are in very similar situations right now.
Yeah.
They're both drafted in 2016. They're both in the final year of their four-year rookie deal with their fifth-year options already exercised. And then you got the franchise tag available to you, obviously.
Well, some people criticized O'Brien for not negotiating a deal before they traded for Tunsil. I don't have any issue with it at all. These are just how deals have to get done sometimes. I think a lot of people, myself included, assumed that in situations like this, the Texans and the Rams will say, all right, we know that we're going to have to give them a league-leading contract. There's still room for bargaining there, you know? And it just, from a PR and an organizational standpoint, and screw the PR side, just from an organizational standpoint, if you trade two first-round picks for a guy and then all of a sudden you've got a holdout issue, that's not a great way to do business.
Right.
So you just assume that you're going to pay through the nose.
Hey, right, you're going to overpay. And if you're going to overpay, you'd rather overpay for somebody who's being discussed among the best at their position. I think at the time of the trade, too, I thought that was unfair criticism, too. I thought it was fair criticism to go, man, look at what you're giving up for this guy. That's fair. If you thought they gave up too much, now it turns out Laremy Tunsil, thus far, small sample size, been a pretty good player. To me, when they were criticizing O'Brien, and I think if there were similar criticism for the Rams, I would say this, is that you've got this deal on the hook. To do the deal, the only thing you, in that situation, unlike Clowney, where you need to get Clowney's acquiescence on the deal, on the Tunsil deal, the only people that need to agree to it, theoretically, are the Dolphins. Because Tunsil's under contract with multiple years still left on his deal. Tunsil doesn't have to bless anything. Now, he could just decide to hold out and not play, but he was never going to do that. The last thing you want to do on a deal where you feel like this is a potentially franchise-changing deal for us is go, okay, well, let's get Tunsil's agent involved in this thing.
Right, let's gum things up.
It's right.
Like when, it's like when too many lawyers get involved in any kind of a deal.
Exactly
it's
what
great.
It's like.
Lawyers are there to gum things up, yeah. But sometimes they do too good a job of it.
They gum up.
Yeah.
The Astros. Hey, Seth, the Astros are involved in a gate.
Oh,
you know, like Spygate
yeah.
and Bountygate?
Yeah.
They're involved in a gate.
It's exciting. I like being involved in a gate.
Yeah, it's good. It means your city is relevant. We will talk about Whistlegate next.